This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Joel Skead and I had the pleasure of sitting down with Josh Morris recently to talk about life as an agent. We explore how to get into the field of work, recruiting players, transfer windows and general misconceptions around agents. Josh, who is experienced playing in the SPFL and was last season playing in the East of Scotland League, is a part-time agent with Sports Entertainment Group, or SEG. The talent management agency represent the likes of Pep Guardiola, Man United boss Erik ten Hag, Dutch ace Cody Gakpo and Aberdeen's Vinny Biswayam. It should be noted that this was recorded in a South Queensferry restaurant, hence some background noise. A pre-deduction coming my way, no doubt. I hope you find the discussion interesting and enjoy it. So Josh, thank you very much for coming on the Terrace Podcast. Jumping straight into it, how do you get into becoming an agent?
So my way was probably a little bit differently to maybe how some get into it, to be fair. I think the traditional route, I think, is similar to the kind of coaching route, is that you kind of become a player and you play at a decent level, then you become a coach or whatever, or you maybe become an agent if you've got that sort of knowledge and sort of acumen. But I was at uni doing a sports management degree, and I went back in 2018, and I only had to do my two final years. And I remember vividly sitting in a lecture in fourth year, and I think it was international sports marketing or something. And I remember just sitting thinking, I wonder, like, I'd always been interested in the agency world, but I mean, I only ever played as high as League Two in Scotland, so it was never like I had a decent playing career behind me. And I remember just sitting in this lecture, very bored at one time, thinking, I'm just going to look into this on my laptop. At the time, I should have been taking notes. And I remember just, I found an article on the Forbes website. It was like the top 10 sports agencies in the world. And I thought, oh, that's quite interesting. I read through it, and then I thought, I just basically sort of remoulded my sort of CV in terms of being a bit more sort of like sport orientated and football orientated. I had a lot of coaching and playing experience at lower levels, but I thought, with the likes of my contacts, my leadership skills, all that sort of stuff, I'm going to like send a wee email. So I literally copy and pasted an email to the ten in this list, and it was all your big hitters like Stellar. It was there was Kin Sports, there was SEG that I went, and I sent 10 emails out, and I got one reply from one, I can't remember who, saying keep an eye on our vacancies online, and SEG got back to me, and it was actually one of the directors that sort of contacted me personally and said, let's get a team. It was a Zoom chat at the time because they're based in Holland, so he was like, let's have a chat on the phone and Zoom. I said, yeah, perfect. And then it kind of just like led for there, and we had a few introductory meetings with a few of the guys high up in the company, and then after that we kind of then moved into a sort of almost like an induction course, essentially, that they put you through, about how the company works, how how their sort of structure works within the company, and yeah, it just kind of went from there. So,
and it's how do you combine it with your part-time work?
So, kind of, but, initially, it was like a, it was very much a sort of, well, it's all a balancing act, I suppose. At the end of the day,
yeah.
I think a huge part of it is. Naturally, football, particularly in Scotland, in the academy games are all either late afternoons or evenings or yep. weekends. So I was fortunately, at the time, my work's pretty much Monday to Friday, so it gave me the opportunity to sort of expand more into weekends, and it became more that you're maybe working, so you're working 6-7 day weeks yeah. technically, because you're going to academy games on a Friday night, or 18s games on a Friday night, you're then maybe watching a team on a Saturday, and up until last year I was actually still playing myself in the East of Scotland League, so I was playing Saturdays, but also try to keep my eye in on who was doing well, keeping all that sort of stuff, scouting, then maybe a game on a Sunday, and yeah, it's tricky because it takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort to not get very much back at sometimes.
Right, okay.
But that's the nature of it. That's just the nature of the way it works. But yeah, it's a balancing act, really.
And in terms of that, you talked about watching 18s football, keeping an eye on, you played at a decent level yourself. What is the process like of recruiting players, getting players on board?
I think, as you can probably imagine, that's the trickiest bit, because yep. purely for the competition aspect, you've got a lot of agencies, a lot of agents that are trying to do the same as you.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, it all comes down to relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's if you've got a strong relationship, if you can build a relationship and create relationships, then build relationships and nurture relationships, I think that was one of the reasons why I thought I could do quite well
yep.
within the agency world, was because I've kind of prided myself over the years in any job that I've done, whether it be even just playing part-time football, is relationships with teammates, coaches,
yep.
managers, supporters, but also friends and family as well. And it's something that I think is just the base of everything you do as an agent is relationships.
Yep.
You then have to add in things like networking and the scouting side of things. So I suppose it's scouting. It's scouting the right players.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to sign the right players. Because as an agent, you're only as good as the players that you sign.
Yep.
So as an agency, you've got to be very selective on. It's not. No disrespect, that I put myself in that, playing League Two football maybe in Scotland at some point. I probably was never in the eye of an agent
yeah.
that was working for an elite agency trying to get players moved, because you're not going to get a player from League Two Scotland into the Premier League in England or to the top five leagues. You know, it just doesn't happen. So it is all about picking the right players, creating relationships, particularly the younger age group. Those relationships that you're creating are with the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the huge one, is speaking to parents, is getting your ideas across, your agency's ideas across, who you are, what you're all about. And it's built on trust, I
yeah.
think. And that's where I think it often gets a bad rep, this sort of agency world, because
yeah.
Don't get me wrong, that there are sides of it that rightly get a bad rep, and I think some people maybe don't particularly help that at times. Not that there's any sort of personal experiences of that, I just mean in general, you read about it,
yeah.
you read about it online anywhere you go, and there is that side of it, but that's where you've got to it's like any sort of business, you've got to have a USP, you've got to have a unique selling point that makes you different from the rest, and that's kind of the key to the recruitment stage, is being different, but also just the relationship and having the right relationship with the right people.
So do you focus on younger players, or is it a case of just looking at, kind of take on any age profile, or is it younger players?
I think, in a word, you look at all. You look
yeah.
at all. You'd be daft not to, because I mean, again, look at the agency world. I think somebody that I remember speaking to that didn't actually work with our agency, that it was when I was first getting into it, and I asked him to meet for a coffee because he'd been an agent for years, a sort of really older, experienced guy. And his words to me were, young players don't make you money. Mm. And I thought, fair enough. And again, it goes back to that, maybe like, why are you in the game? And you're doing it because you want to help people and guide their careers and focus on them and help them. Or are you doing it purely for the money? So I think that's when it becomes, you look at all, yes, you're looking all the time at players that are currently playing at a good level, that are they not happy with their agent? Are they looking for somebody else? Have they maybe never had an agent and they're now at a point where they think it's viable? But if we look at particularly in Scotland, I think you've got to look at the sort of younger players.
Yeah.
And it, again, being a Scottish fan, football fan, it's hard for me to say, but we're not quite the best in terms of, we're getting there, we're slowly but surely getting there, however, you still feel like we're a little bit behind some of the others, more developed, of academy countries and stuff, but we've got to then be quite selective on those youth players that you are looking at, and in terms of our agency, we're primarily looking at sort of international level players. And what we mean by that is not playing first team Scotland at 16 year old, it's are they playing for Scotland at any age group?
Yeah.
Because at that point they must be the best at that age because they're in the Scottish national team. So yeah, that's kind of how it works in terms of a recruitment side of things.
So suppose that kind of answers my next question in terms of the economics of it. Is it a case of being pretty selective in terms of just having a core base of fewer clients rather than hoovering up and just having a massive stable?
Yeah, I think that's huge. I think, again, that there's people that have different ideologies and different philosophies around it and ways of working. However, the way that we work collectively is purely sort of quality over quantity. Mm. And I think it's like anything, though, if you think of the visual sort of analogy of like sort of balancing balloons, if you've got two or three balloons that you can keep up and you're keeping them all in the air at the same time, that's great because you're looking after all three of them at the same time. As soon as you start throwing four, five, six, seven balloons on one person at a time, that's when you're starting to drop them, and it's like that balloon that you're dropping is actually a player that's, he doesn't want to be your agent. He doesn't want you to be his agent anymore.
Yeah.
Because you're not giving him the focus that you should. So it's definitely a, don't get me wrong, like you have to, it's a constant, you're constantly recruiting because players get older and players retire, and then you've, your agency, the players that you've got in your agency, I think at the moment we're sitting with about 270 odd players within our sort of network. But then next season that might go down to 260 because 10 of them might retire. You don't know. So then it's like, well, we need to get it back to 270 and 280 and 290. Mm. And you need to be constantly sort of looking at that. So I think, and that's where it becomes a real team game.
Yep.
We again, not speaking for other agencies because I've never had any experience with other agencies working with them, but we're all focused on teamwork.
Yep.
Like teamwork is the base of everything that we do in terms of working together on targeting players, recruiting players, but also then the transfer side of things. But for our recruitment side, it's definitely quality over quantity, because if you stockpile 10 players, you're then going to sort of take, you can quite easily take your eye off the ball.
Yeah.
It's the same in any walk of life. If your caseload, whatever job you're doing, is too big, there's certain parts of that caseload that get forgotten about and missed. Mm-hmm. And that's not fair on that particular aspect. It's just so happens to be that in the sort of agency world, when you take your eye off the ball, that's taking your eye off a player that could go and sign for a competitor, and it might actually be one of your better players. And so it becomes really difficult. Yeah. So it's definitely that side of things.
The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So with the work with ACG, is it a case of do you bring players into that agency rather than they give you players to look after?
Kind of. I think we're also all individually, all agents are individually responsible for recruitment and for sort of signing your own players. However, the good thing about it being a team game with us and being collectively sort of on it is the 270 players that we've got are technically all of our players, because we all work for them. Everything that we do is around the client. But there are different sort of types of it. For example, if a player moved to Scotland, at the moment, being the only Scottish agent within ACG, if a player moved to Scotland on a transfer from England or even abroad, I would help that player settle in and almost service that player, essentially, in a way of making them sure that they're settled, that they've got apartments or houses, and they've got a car, and they've got a mobile phone, and their internet's set up, and all the sort of smaller things that you kind of forget about. Now, don't get me wrong, I think clubs are getting better at helping players with that. Most clubs have player liaison officers, and I think some of the bigger clubs will have more of them, but we do that from our point of view as well. So there is that aspect of when players move within the network, you're then working with other players that maybe aren't technically your own that you've signed, sort of thing.
Because I think a lot of fans will just think of agents and just think of the work in the transfer window. What is, but obviously there's more to that, so what is, you kind of touched on making their sale, what is the relationship with players, and what's the job when the transfer window shut? So now, what's a normal kind of like working week or day in September, October?
I think it's purely, from my point of view, it's the role of an agent, and particularly, even in the summer and winter transfer windows, the player might not particularly be looking to move. The player might be happy. So players that, although you within an agency, you're helping other players maybe get to different clubs, but for your own player, it's helping them sort of through life, essentially, and being that sort of professional contact that should they have any questions and queries, you're maybe not actually, you're not with them every day, put it that way, but you're at the end of the phone for them, and it's should they have any questions, they know where you are, they can text, they can phone, and it's more of you're guiding them through their career, and it's a career thing for us. It's not, you're not looking at, alright, it's the winter window coming up, what you want in for the winter window. It's actually, what you're looking for in the next 3, 4, 5, 6 windows, into your late 20s or whatever it may be, and then you can talk about it like that. So I think it's more just in that sort of like during the season side of thing. It's just making sure that they're happy, that they've got what they need. If they're in the same country as you, it's maybe meeting them for a coffee every now and again. It's maybe sort of, it's probably watching them a good few times as well, but sort of having that presence at games, so that when you're talking about maybe future transfers and stuff, you're talking from a point of, well, I've watched you, you've done really well, you're doing this well, you're doing that well. But it's generally just been it's been that sort of professional contact that they can have if they need you. But it all goes back to that kind of relationship side of things, is if you've got a good relationship with them, it becomes a bit of a kind of working friendship. Because you, the nature of football, sometimes you're moving places that you don't have people that you know. So that's when our network of agents, not just players, our network of agents come in, and then you've then, so if a player moves from Scotland to Holland or Scotland to Germany, we already have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 agents all scattered around the country that go, right, you're 15 minutes for this guy, here's his number, go meet him for a coffee and he'll introduce you to the local area, he'll show you about. So it kind of goes, that's kind of what it's like in the off-season a little bit.
And before getting on to talk about the transfer window, talking about recruitment of players, what you mentioned, like, if they're young, they've maybe not got an agent, or they're looking to move agency, you talked about getting them with their parents, like speaking of the conversations, relationship with their parents. What are the kind of conversations you have with prospective clients?
I think it's one of the first things that we ask is, what are their dreams? What is the player's dream?
Mm.
Usually with the younger players, parents are there involved. So the parents sometimes have their own views on that, and that's when it can sometimes become a bit complex, let's say, because a player might have one vision at 16, but also the parents might have this grand vision of them doing X, Y, and Z, and it's sometimes sort of reining in a little bit to say, well, what's actually realistic, what we'll try our best to. And I think that's, again, going back, the relationship is great and you've got to work at that relationship, but there are actually some things where you can sit down with parents and with players and you talk about what are your dreams, and that's one of the first questions you ask. And it might be quite evident early on that there's you're kind of singing off different hymn sheets.
Yeah.
And it might actually be a point where you might get to a point where you say, look, this, it probably won't work, because expectations might be different, or there might be different. I mean, there's some things that, you know, like some age, some parents and players in certain countries demand sort of, they want a car, they want a house, they want an envelope of cash to sign with your agency and stuff like that, and that's no go. That's as soon as we hear that,
red flag.
Yeah, it's like exactly that. And again, it comes down to, again, another analogy, like if you had a girlfriend or a wife that was, you know, just demanding the most expensive handbags all the time after a week of seeing them, a red flag, you're probably going to avoid that in the nicest way possible. And it's similar because the relationship's got to work both ways.
Yep.
So in that conversation of what are your dreams, that sounds like something that we can get on board with, because, and then it's a stage of, right, what can we offer you? We're here for your career. We want to have career, lifelong sort of relationship that is a working relationship, but we are maximising your career, we're helping you every stage of the way, but also it's also not sort of sugarcoating it and saying that should a bad injury happen, we're still going to be there to help you, whether it be rehab, whether it be recovery, whether it be treatment, whatever it, personal training, anything. That's where that little bit of added sort of USP, like we were saying. So that's when that all kind of comes into it a little bit. It's based on the expectations, but everything that we do is client centric. So the client's at the heart of everything that, as an agency, that we do cover. And I think that's quite important. It is like that.
And so I suppose that filtering process of making sure they are the right, kind of the right character. Like that relationship with parents, they're not overly demanding, I'm guessing will help retention, that you're not going to be having to move on from a player because of a difference of opinion.
Well, yeah, I think it sets out clear boundaries quite early on. I think boundaries are key, again, in most workplaces, but in particular within this, it becomes super important that there's boundaries there from the start.
Mm-hmm.
But those boundaries can be expectation based. They can be, look, this is what we say we're going to do, and we will do that. However, if you start coming at us 3 years later saying that you want X, Y, and Z, it's not going to happen, sort of thing. I mean, they're just hypothetical sort of stories, but I think it is definitely that we are trying to be there for the career. I mean, an example of that is one of the best players to play in the Premier League, arguably Robin van Persie, was with our agency from young age, went through his whole career, Arsenal, Man United, all till he retired. We're actually still his registered, we're his agency,
yeah.
Even after his football career. So we, his commercial deals and his advertising, all that, and everything he now wants to do after football, we are heavily involved in, because we've got that strong relationship that's been there from day one. So that's the kind of, and it's good having sort of success stories like that. It's not like we say it and we don't follow through with it. It's like that. The evidence is there with clients like that, and that's a kind of crucial one. And I think that's when it comes to that point where we also, I mean, some of it, like, we at the moment, we're very fortunate that we've got both Manchester managers under our sort of roster of coaches that we have as agents. So we've got Pep Guardiola and we've got Erik ten Hag. And even that in itself sort of builds the sort of reputation of, when you are chatting to parents and you are chatting for that longevity of, like, oh, we've got coaches at that level. But also, we've got players to back it up, we've got the stories to back it up, and the proof's in the pudding, and that's the way we work.
So with in terms of players kind of leaving or not having an agent, is what are the kind of popular reasons for that? Is it just kind of retirement, or do you find that many players get to an age and they just like, I don't need an agent, I can take care of stuff myself?
Sometimes I think there is, it can all depend, because of the sort of nature of transfers and football. It's actually a very, very, very difficult industry in terms of, take the agents out of it, even just sort of making deals, and it's, we know ourselves as football fans that it's a game of opinions, and even in transfers it's a game of opinions, because you're relying on other clubs having a good opinion of your client and taking your client and buying your client or signing your client. So there are times where maybe later in careers or at different stages of careers, players might think that they're maybe not doing the job that you want them to do. However, we've made it very clear from maybe the start that that's not how we work, and how we work is this, this, and this. And it sometimes can just be, again, like anything, any relationships. Sometimes relationships just become apart from each other.
They naturally run
their course. And I think that is quite often what happens in certain cases, that you get to a point where it's maybe just not working, or it's maybe just that you maybe feel, as you said, it maybe gets to a point where you feel, I don't really need an agent. That's that. So yeah, that's the most sort of, that's the most sort of, not used excuse, but that's sort of the most common reason for that sort of maybe split. And it's never, I think sometimes it comes across as it's like a fallout and stuff, but it's very, very rarely fallout. It's actually more just a working agreement. It's like any sort of contract that in any walk of life, that it maybe just runs its course, and that's that. We part our ways and go elsewhere, sort of thing. So,
do you feel your experience in professional football is kind of key, or is, do you feel like it's not a necessity to have it as an agent?
I don't think it is a necessity, and I say that from a point of view, like I wouldn't even class myself as having experience in professional football, because I think, as I said, the highest I got was League Two, and it's like going to Central Park for a game at Cowmeath doesn't give you quite the experience to deal with like the highest level. But I think an enjoyment, but also a deep knowledge of football.
Yep.
I would say is crucial, because yep. I think particularly as if you look at it from a fan's point of view, there's millions of people who love football in this country alone. Not all of them actually maybe have played football or have coached football, and they maybe don't understand that necessarily the background of a football club or a changing room or X, Y, and Z, you know. And I think, so that's when I think a sort of deep knowledge of football is handy. I don't necessarily believe a playing experience is necessary, because I think that can sometimes, although that's sometimes looked upon as like, oh, he's played at this level, so he'll be great at this. We see it in coaching and management all the time, that great careers go to management and not good enough. And that's where I go back to the whole sort of like relationships, networks, people skills. I mean, Matt, going back to sort of USP on a personal level, one of the things for me was, I know about football, check. I've played a little bit of football, check. I've coached at a kind of lower level, check. But also I've got good contacts, check. But actually, my job is in youth work, like my other job.
Yeah.
So I look after people,
yeah.
I help people, I support people, I put things in place for people, I'm working with people every day. So I've been able to transfer that into the footballing world and say, okay, well, I can look after you and I can look after your career and I'll help you and I'll guide you. And it's not coming from a place of, well, how much money can I get from you? It's actually, no, you're an actual incredible talent here. We want to try and maximise that for you and do this, that, and the next thing, and hopefully see you like have a great career.
Yeah.
So I think that's when it comes down to the playing career. Maybe it helps in certain circumstances, maybe more for the contact side of things and the reputation side of things, because I think particularly in Scottish football it's a small world. And you see that at times, in particular with managers that come and go. It's often the same names. It's like a merry-go-round off.
Yep.
Like somebody comes off and oh, he'll come in and blah, blah, blah. And it can be a bit like that. So it's almost trying to break the mould a little bit with that, to say, well, hold on a minute. And I think one player that did that very well was Tam Courts, in a sense, in the fact that came from this sort of, he's only ever managed at Kelty and east of Scotland and Lowland. Fair enough. But actually, as a person, do you know him? His people skills, do you know about that? Do you know about his leadership? And actually, he's then went and proved that he's actually very good.
Yeah.
And I think that's it's trying to break that mould in the agency game as well, to say, oh, I might not have had a career, but I've got a few contacts, but also I'm not shy to go up to somebody to introduce myself and prove that, do you know what, I'm actually quite a nice guy. Mm. You can have a chat with me. I'm not arrogant. I'm not, because I think, again, going back to that sort of bad rep, sometimes agents get is, oh, look at him, like, he's cocksure, and he's like, he's got the swagger, and he's got all the designer gear, and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, no, I'm away to watch a game with a jacket from Asda. Do you know what I mean? Like, that sort of thing. And it's trying to break that mould a little bit in terms of, like, no, I'm just a normal person that likes football, been lucky enough to work in football now, and I just want to help other people in football.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's what it comes down to.
Right, so moving on to the transfer window. How do you approach a transfer window? And is it different summer to January?
Yes, different from summer to January. One, in the sense, naturally and obviously, for the length of the window, it is a shorter window. But you hear managers and people talking all the time, January is notoriously a difficult window to work in because of teams' budgets, because of contracts. There very rarely is there players that are free in January because contracts usually run summer to summer, or June to June, whatever, June, May, June, July time. So there's most of the time there's transfer fees involved, but it's then getting out of contracts if they're not, all this sort of stuff. In terms of, I think it, from a personal point of view, in terms of how we work as well, there's a lot of preparation that goes into these kind of windows. And what I mean by that is, collectively we have sort of regular meetings and keeping in touch with other agents within our network to say, right, okay, we've got the summer window coming up. What are your club's requirements? What are you going to need? And say to clubs, look, the window's coming up. What's your target? What kind of player are you looking for? What rough salary have you got? What rough budget have you got? All the X, Y, and Z. And at that point, it's then going away. And then on the other side of it is preparing. Well, who's in our player network, who's actually available? So who's looking to move? Who's available to move? What are the terms? What are the transfers that's going to be involved? What's the club looking for? All this sort of stuff. And that maybe happens sort of, you're maybe talking sort of 1, 2, 3 months before these windows. So that's going back to one of your last questions about what are you doing out of the transfer window.
Yeah.
Actually, it kind of then becomes a bit of a rolling cycle of, you're just prepping for the next window in a way, because you're then looking at, I mean, we have brilliant guys at HQ in Amsterdam in our main office that sit and create spreadsheets of, well, where are the most popular transfers from each country. So we get sent and say, the top transfers from the UK go to Spain, Germany, France.
Yeah.
And we can go, okay, so if we've got players in the UK, we know that by statistics, they're most likely to go to here, there and there.
Mm.
So you can then work on that. And I think the key thing, particularly, I think it's more agent-wide, but particularly in our agency, is knowledge is key. So network knowledge, knowing about your clubs, knowing about your players, and that's when it just becomes a preparation game for these windows, in terms of, so when the window does open, you've maybe already had conversations before, but obviously as soon as the window opens, that's when things can actually happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a kind of preparation game, and it just is a cycle, really.
So say one of your clients is wanting to buy a club, and then it's signed by a club. Are you able to walk us through exactly kind of the steps of how it works, how a transfer works?
I think it's, I mean, everywhere is different, every club's different, and I think every transfer can be different as well. I think it's, one thing to say, I think it's incredibly hard to get a transfer through.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, from all angles, you've got so many people involved, there's maybe so many hurdles involved to get over, there's contracts and there's sometimes disputes and there's, right, they've got this in place but we need to get that, and it can be a minefield of sort of hurdles to get over before actually signing on the dotted line.
Yep.
And I think, again, coming from, I'm fairly new into this game, I'm only 2 years into it, but even already, coming from 2 years ago when I was a supporter, and a supporter alone, to now being sort of another side of things, is when you read rumours and you read about, you hear fans saying, how are we not just signing him, and how are we not just signing that player, and he was brilliant there, but it would be brilliant if it was that easy. But you can kind of, I'd say that can sometimes come from a club's point of view as well. I think clubs are now becoming very, very data driven. So everything that clubs do nowadays is most of the time built on data, and it's statistics of that player that they're trying to sign. So often it's very rare that a transfer happens within a few days. It's often something that's been going on for months in the background. I mean, the club side of recruitment, that's a constant thing that they're constantly looking at. Well, who fits our system? Who's doing this? We want a player to do that, so let's find a player. So they're constantly doing that, as well as, from our point of view, we've got to try and sort of read what they're thinking and saying, well, we've actually got so-and-so that might do this, this and this for you. So it can be a bit of like, there can be months, and this goes on for months, and it's, in some cases it can be, we can't do it this summer, but let's look at next summer. Or we can't do it in January, let's do it in the summer, or let's see how they get on. So it can be quite a sort of long, drawn-out process of, like, scouting, recruitment, the statistics, does he fit our team? Not to mention, nowadays, you've now got sporting directors and directors of football and technical directors and all these sort of stuff. These guys are usually the ones that are doing the initial stages.
Mm-hmm.
It then goes to the manager, and managers go, yeah, I like him, yeah, let's have a look at him, let's see what we can do. But at the same time, it then might go to the manager, and like we said earlier about opinions, the manager might turn around and go, I don't like him. All the data says that he's good, but he's not for me. And that's when it becomes really, really tricky, because when we say you need opinions, you're then needing, instead of just one opinion, you need two, three, four opinions to all go the same way to make a deal happen. So yeah, although it seems maybe on the outside like, who are we just signing him? It's actually because the club are still doing their work on him, and it's just a long, drawn-out process.
Yeah. Is that why so many transfers are left until the last few days of the window?
Well, yeah, I think, don't get me wrong, I think from a... I think there's definitely a sort of commercial side of the whole deadline day thing.
Yep.
From some outlets in terms of media-wise. and fans love it, don't they? But who are we going to sign on the last day? And I think in particular, you'll get clubs that might be forced into making rash choices because injuries, suspensions, out of form, transfers out, you know, they might actually think going into the last week of a window, you're fine, your squad's full. Come the end of the week, they've got a day left and they've actually got two serious long-term injuries, two suspensions, and actually your best player's just been sold. So all of a sudden a club's then going, oh, right, okay, last day, let's go. The other side of it is, the reason why it maybe gets to the deadline day is because clubs have probably been managing their budget. What have they got left? This is our very often clubs have priorities. It's not like they just have, oh, he's our target, we'll try and find him. Right, we can't get him, who are we going for next? They've already got that worked out.
Yeah.
And actually, the clubs are probably talking to agents, clubs of maybe three or four players at the same time, all sort of figuring out the way, how's the land laying sort of thing at that point, before actually going, right, we actually only want him, and that money's more justified because this, that, and the next thing. And it can become quite that's when it becomes really difficult, because you think you've got your number one priority, and it might be your client, for example. However, they might think that the money that they're spending, they're better spending on their number three priority. And it can become a sort of a priority game as well come the deadline day of who do we actually need here? Right, we can't get him, can't get him, can't get him. Right, we need to get him. And it does maybe become a bit frantic, but often it goes to maybe the last couple of days or deadline day purely down to the fact that clubs are just doing their homework.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes, whether if it's not homework, it is that sort of minefield of obstacles that clubs, agents, other clubs are getting over to get a deal through.
I suppose there'll be, you said, numerous challenges, there's a lot of hurdles to go through, but in kind of a couple of situations where, what happens if a player that's in your, one of your clients is out of favour, what is your role there? And also, what happens if you've got a client who the club want to move on, but he's very much happy to stay put?
I think they're all difficult, because at the end of the day, you're dealing with people at the end of the day, so it's all very well. Sometimes people forget that when you're talking about players and clients, they are actually people. They're not sort of just inanimate objects that you can just sell on and that's it. Although that kind of, in a roundabout way, I suppose you are kind of trying to do that sometimes in transfer windows. If a player was out of favour, for example, it's nowadays most players have got the confidence to go and speak themselves. What do I need to do to get in the team? Speak to the manager. The manager tells them, you need to do this, this and this, or whatever. It's then at a stage where if they're really not in favour for weeks, months and end, it's then as our job to maybe approach the club to say, look, this isn't working. What's it going to take to get this player out? And that's when it becomes difficult, because then clubs then will try and maximise their own side in terms of, right, well, we want this much. And that's when it becomes, again, back to sort of some of these barriers, that's when it becomes really difficult. Because
so in that situation, do you have to go to, is it on kind of your responsibility to go to other clubs to try and sell them, or is it the club themselves who essentially have that responsibility to try and sell them?
Particularly in this day, I think it's always been a case, but clubs have contacts at other clubs. Mm. So you'll get managers that will speak to the manager and say, Your boy that's out of favour, what do you think, blah, blah, blah. But also, it is our responsibility to also say, well, look, let's go and see the market. Let's go, what is the market saying? Let's go and just tout your name and see what bites. Like, it's a bit of game of fishing, essentially. Mm. It's dangling that sort of like fishing rod out there into the big world of football clubs to say, this guy's available potentially for this much, this salary, blah, blah, blah. It's then just, it's a sort of a bit of a waiting game to see, well, who's going to bite first, essentially. So there is a bit of that in terms of when it comes out of favour and finding out. That's why it's really important, again, back to relationships. You've not just got the relationship with the player, you've got the relationship with the club, that you can approach the club in an open manner to say, right, look, let's be serious, this isn't working.
Yeah.
He maybe wants to move. What are you thinking? And it becomes a bit of a, we can then go to our other agents in other countries that have also got good relationships with their clubs and say over a coffee, by the way, so-and-so is actually available. What do you think? Oh, that's actually interesting. We need a whatever. Yeah. And then that's where they can kind of build from there. So there's certain, that is, but again, that's just a couple of examples.
Yeah.
There's so many things that could happen in that sense, and that's again back to why it can be so difficult. I think.
Yeah. What about I suppose this covers players moving, but also players who are maybe looking for a new deal. Are you, in terms of contract talks? I think the fans will picture it just sat around a conference table, and how does that work? How does that work?
It's again. Quite often is a drawn out process, long drawn out process. It's usually sometimes initiated by clubs. If the club really value a player, it's like, right, we want to tie this player down. What are we going to do to get it sorted? There's the other side of it where it's maybe the player or the agent going and saying, like, 2 years left, but he's doing really well just now. What do you think? But it's not quite as simple as a sort of, right, let's all get around the table. The table and thrash this out, as it's known. It's like, right, well, what's he looking for? What are you? And again, it goes back to, like, the knowledge is key, the relationships are key, because if you've got the knowledge of what your player's worth, and you've got knowledge of not necessarily what other players are getting paid, because that's sometimes irrelevant, and you don't really need to know that, but it's good to know roughly what's going on. What if you've got a player and you've got another player that's similar, and you maybe know a rough idea of what their contract is, you can then use that to say, look, we know that so-and-so's doing really well just now, let's try and sort of reward it. So it's a bit of a kind of, knowledge is key, but also it's down to that that kind of back and forward, and the art of negotiation certainly comes into it at that point, because any nature of business, you're always going to get people that will try and, like, the clubs want to look after their own interests and the player wants to look after theirs, and so you're constantly back and forward, and it's just trying to get to that, like, generally getting to that middle ground where everybody's happy, and it's actually like, oh yeah, like, let's go for this.
Yep.
That is a lot of to and fro, and again, different. Some clubs are different in terms of how they work, in terms of what they offer, like bonus structures and wages and salary, all this sort of stuff that can be really sort of like drawn out. But it's very rarely is it done in a couple of hours sitting around the board game. It's often weeks, maybe months at a time, saying, okay, let's see what's out there, and let's have a chat, like, we like this, but we actually want this added, and then it becomes very legal as well. You've then got sort of like club lawyers involved, not in a negative way, but going through that fine tooth comb of, okay, that's fine, what happens if this happens, right, okay, and that's when it becomes really sort of like difficult in terms of getting it sorted, because you've then got legal departments from agency side, club side, all sort of going over these like contracts, hundreds of pages at times. It can become, quite a drawn out process at times. It's not quite as easy as saying, he's our best player, give him a 4-year deal. If only it was that easy.
Yeah. What agents will be wanting is more Peter Risdales and offering Seth Johnson far too much money. What about in terms of out of contract? Have you had much experience in terms of out of contract players? You looking at what is your role there outside the window? I'm kind of looking outside the window. What's your role there? Is it organising kind of trials or just punting their name about what's?
It can be a little bit that. I think the old school way, generally picking up your phone and phoning contacts. I've got this player. Can you come for a trial? Like,
yep.
Available for this. Blah blah blah. But there's also, I mean, now in the world of technology, there's a few sort of like really, really sort of handy sort of like sites that you can use. We use a site to basically pitch players to clubs.
Okay.
So not just free agents, but all players are different for transfer fees and for all, and we can put them up. So that's kind of a good place for free agents to be seen throughout the season. Clubs can constantly track at times. But again, back to it comes down to solely about your relationships and your knowledge. If you have a free agent that within your agency network that's available, for example, you have a striker that's 6'5", target man, blah blah blah. Next minute, because of your knowledge of your teams and your area and your clubs and your market, you can say, you get a phone call one day to say, Josh, have you got a target man striker? Ours has just done his cruciate and he's out for 9 months. Funnily enough, yes, I've got, and it can be a bit, and it's just about, it's also from a club's point of view, from them, for their knowledge to know that you probably have an option somewhere, so that if something like that was to happen, the clubs can equally get in touch with you to say, like, we're struggling just now, have you got a winger, have you got this, have you got that, and then it's down to you to go and have a look at the market to say, yeah, we've got this, we've got that, can come on trial, whatever it may be. But there is that aspect of the sort of old school picking up the phone and saying, look, we've got this player, he's just finished his contract at so and so, looking for a club, he's fit, able to trial, what's your thoughts? And it's just, yeah, taking it from there and seeing how that goes.
I suppose that's the key part of that with the player himself, is the relationship, because I'm guessing it's a very hard time for the player when they are out of contract, and especially when the season's going. For example, one player I can think of is Dylan McGill, because I spoke to him during the summer, and he was looking to get back in, but I don't think he's got another club, and it's just a very difficult period.
Yeah, I think it is. I think not just even that period. I think as a footballer, again, from speaking from experience from kind of lower leagues, like the mental health and mental sort of fatigue that can sometimes come through football is really tricky, and sometimes goes amiss, and people forget about it at times. And in particular, you talk about injuries and end of contracts and stuff, that can be like a really, really difficult thing to deal with. So there is that side where that relationship's key, because if you've got a good relationship, you can provide support, you can be that person at the end of the phone or in person, you can talk them through things, and you can keep them aware of what's happening. And it is just kind of trying to remind them that, like, that things will be all right, we'll get there, sort of thing. And you're then more of that friend at times when it is that mental health side of things is kicking in, because look, I think it's not just, again, we're not talking about inanimate objects, they're people at the end of the day, these players. So when they're out of contract, the stress of a trial, you know, like the stress of a trial sometimes, if they're not maybe at the top level and they're having to go on trial, a trial can be quite a daunting thing. You know what I mean? It can be, and it's like if you don't do well, you know, that's it. There's lots of different things that go on with that, that side of things, and it is just, again, the relationship's key to that. But if you've got a strong relationship and they know where you're coming from, and also you can prove that you're working on them, and you're, look, we've spoken to so-and-so, here's some actual written feedback from the club to say that they're thinking about it, but, you know, like at the moment maybe not for them, or whatever it may be, you're proving that you're doing your job.
Yep.
And it's just, again, you're hoping, and sometimes you need a bit of luck that an opinion goes for you and somebody wants you.
And you touched on the kind of technology side, and you touched on stats, and your conversation. So you've been in the agency for 2 years. Conversations with other agents, more experienced ones in SEG. How important is technology and statistics come in for an agent to be able to keep track of that kind of stuff?
I think it's massive. We have access to a website called SciSports, similar sort of ground to your likes of your Y Scout and things like that.
Yeah.
But essentially, it's a data-driven website that we can go on, log in, and we can see any player in the world essentially, and they work in their own sort of like ratings of the players, and they have a sort of current rating and a potential rating, but it's all based on their stats, and it tells you what type of player, if they're a centre midfielder, are they a box-to-box midfielder, are they a defensive midfielder, are they attacking midfielder, playmaker, all that sort of stuff, and it almost breaks it down into like a sort of football manager format where you're looking at their scores and right. But not just from that, we actually can use that, and we can file reports based on, because this site analyses teams and clubs worldwide, this site knows how teams play.
Yeah.
So we can actually use that to our benefit to say, okay, we've got a player in our network that's looking to move. His style, where does he fit?
Mm-hmm.
And this site actually can produce a report to say, well, do you know what? His top five options at the moment are probably 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yep.
Because they play this way, he suits that, they play that, blah, blah, blah. And it becomes really intricate, but also it helps us because we can then take that report and go to the club and say, look, you might not be looking at the moment for this kind of player, but we've got evidence to show that he actually would be a great fit for your team because he does X, Y, and Z, his stats are saying this, all the rest of it. Again, at that point, you're helping them, but you're also saying to them, well, you go and do your own work and come back to us. And that's how some deals come out of the blue, because it's maybe just been pitched right and you've actually proved that they do need that. Yes, you need to go off, like, what do clubs need? And they're saying that they need a certain position or a certain type of player. But if you can actually do a bit of legwork before it to say, well, we've done a wee bit of work as well, this guy's perfect for your team, and you look a wee bit short at the moment there, what do you think? And that's where data can be massive.
Yeah.
And I think it's been crucial for us, because if we went in without the data or without the stats, we're then behind.
Yeah.
Because clubs nowadays are stats mad, you know, like every player is a GPS, you know, they've all got their data for running stats and their distances and speeds and everything like that, but also they're actually, well, how many forward passes has your centre midfielder made, and it then comes down to a really, and clubs go through it with a fine tooth comb
nowadays,
where it's like, nah, he's not quite what we're looking for based on stats. So now that we can use that for our benefit now as well, really, really helps. So it's massive. It's massive.
How often are you in contact with clubs?
I think it depends, because again, like relationships and like people like different ways of communication, or different not modes of communication, but maybe sort of at different times. So there's some clubs that you're maybe in contact with weekly. There's maybe contact that happens. Maybe it's maybe random phone calls. I make a point of maybe just checking in. If I don't hear from contacts within maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks, I maybe just drop a message, how things are, right? I saw your results recently, doing okay, but anything, are you doing anything at the moment, transfer-wise, are you looking? Because that's the thing, there is still that sort of market for free agents.
Yeah.
We're quite fortunate we don't have too many at the moment, but there are still, if they're looking, you can then start planning for your Januaries. And I think keeping that constant communication, just the relationship improves, but also you are just kind of constantly keeping up to date with the market and
knowledge and stuff.
And knowledge.
And that relationship conversation, is it primarily with managers or sport directors or?
It differs. I think we try. I think as a sort of point of rule, I think it's crucial is that you're trying to speak to the decision makers.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you can sell a player to the goalkeeping coach and tell him that he'll be brilliant for the team. Is the goalkeeping coach going to be actually having a say in that transfer? Probably not.
Mm.
So it is at a point where, and it's known the structure of clubs. It's known, okay, decision makers, you might not be in direct contact with decision makers directly, but because of the structure that a club has in place in terms of when they get suggestions of players or reports or players put into them, it all goes into a central pot where everybody looks at it, and it's that. So if you know that, then that's great. But it's just, and again, going back to the way that football is, when the revolving doors, not just of managers, but sometimes it can be directors of footballs and sporting directors, they come and go, and coaches change and managers change. That's where your network comes in, because you might have a great relationship with a club and with a manager. Next minute he's out of a job, the next manager comes in, never had any contact with. So then you're relying on your network to say, you got a job of contact for so-and-so. And that's just, you have to then, it's that starting from scratch relationship. So,
and what do you make of What do you make of teams who are very closely aligned with agents? So you're looking at George Mendes as is the biggest one. What's your view on that side of the game?
I think, to be honest with you, I wouldn't, because I'm fairly new to the game, I don't have a kind of strong opinion on that in terms of personally. All I can really speak from as a collective, from SEG's point of view, is that we work on a basis of transparency and honesty. And I think what we are very transparent and honest about is the fact that we work for all clubs. We're not in the game to say we only work with this club and this club. Personally and as a collective agency, I think it's really important that way, because for your clients, you're then saying to them, you're not pigeonholing them to be, well, actually, we only really work with so-and-so and so-and-so, so we can maybe only try and get you there. It then becomes, that then becomes more difficult. Whereas we are, as I said, we are very transparent and honest right from the get-go, as we work with all the top clubs, but we actually work worldwide. We're open to, we try and have contacts at every club, and again, not just, well, we'd love to have contacts everywhere in the world. We like to think with good contacts and top, like pretty much everywhere you need, top five leagues, the leagues below that, the development leagues, the money leagues, all this sort of stuff, because that's what you need to do. So we try very hard to make that very clear, that look, we're not going to work with just certain clubs, we work with everyone and for everyone.
And with that, you talked about being a worldwide agency. What, from your experience, what kind of the cultural differences in terms of agency work in UK as opposed to abroad? And is there any markets which are more complex than others? I'm thinking MLS, because the way the structure of MLS is.
Yeah, I think primarily on that, I think, and I alluded to it there with a comment about kind of money leagues. Yeah. I think you've got, like, I think at this stage, you have got the MLS can be classed as a bit of a money league at times, but although they have caps in place and they have sort of marquee signings as such as they go, they've also, you've got the likes of China and you've got the likes of all these kind of top leagues that have like kind of rich owners and they're throwing money about, and that they can be complex in a way as well. You do have other countries that just work differently. You've got clubs that work with, we talked about decision makers, some managers in some countries, I mean, some managers all over the world, there's some managers that don't get a say in transfers. And that's when it becomes difficult, because you're then pitching, you can be pitching to the wrong person. It might be presidents and it might be chief execs and it might be they actually make decisions in some countries. So it can be quite a complex thing, but again, going back to knowledge is key. It then comes down to the knowledge that we have got agents in these countries that they know how it works. So I would never go and personally try and do that on my own. I would phone my colleague in this country and say, blah, 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 how does this work? And then he can give me the lowdown. Vice versa, it works the other way. They quite often would message me and say, Scotland, UK, or more Scotland, how does that work? And it just becomes, again, that's where teamwork's key for us in terms of market knowledge, industry knowledge, but also just actually cultural knowledge as well, to say, how's this going to work?
And just because that kind of cultural knowledge is, just before I finish up, looking at some like the moves that you just like never seen that coming, like Stuart Duff when going out to Kazakhstan and Andy Halliday to go to, I think it was Azerbaijan. It's like, how do those come about? How do they those weird kind of connections?
I think it's basically the last word you used there is connections. I think sometimes it can be that an agent or a coach has worked or seen somebody and they put two and two together and they've matched the dots up and said, oh, wonder if he fancies it. So there's various sort of ways that those kind of deals can come about. But again, it's going back to, like I mentioned earlier on, about finding out, well, right, what are the most popular transfers from said country? Right, from the UK, they go from here, their top three leagues are here, here and here. But opposite way, they might say, well, but actually, at the other side of that, if you've got a network of agents and players, and a player is available, and they're getting pitched to teams all over the world, all it takes, back to opinions, all it takes is a player to go, that's an interesting one, never thought about that. let's look at it more. And then all of a sudden, you've then got a player from Scotland going to Azerbaijan, yeah. or you've then got a player from wherever going there. And that's, I think we've seen it recently in terms of, particularly from Celtic's point of view, looking at the Japanese market. That came from the fact that Ange Postecoglou has got strong relationships and strong networks and knowledge of that market. So what looks from the outside of like, oof, that's a bold move, getting a couple of guys to Japan, actually, they're brilliant players, he knows the way they play, he knows the, all that sort of stuff comes into it.
Do you think there's, in terms of Scottish clubs, do you think there's markets out there that are underexplored?
I think so, I think definitely. I think when you look at the likes of, in particular, again, from Hart's point of view, they've explored the Australian market.
Yeah.
You can even go back as far as like Ryan McGowan and Dylan McGowan coming in years ago, but more recently, three players have came from the Australian leagues into Hearts, and all of a sudden they're now in national teams. And so there are, but I think there's certainly leagues out there that are just, and it is just, I suppose it's back to the whole sort of small world of, well, what do we know? Well, we know that they're the type of players that fit the Scottish game. But it's then, like we said, I talked earlier about breaking the mould a little bit. It's trying to say, well, let's actually open the horizons a little bit and say, well, are there players in other leagues that might actually still suit the Scottish game, but haven't really been explored yet?
Yeah.
That's kind of, it's an interesting one that I think it just comes to, again, down to knowledge, connections, relationships, who's been where and who fits systems and types of players and stuff like that.
So kind of to finish up, my pal, because Sarah was going to, speaking to my pal, jokingly said to ask you, as an agent, how you sleep at night. But what are the common misconceptions you feel for agents?
I said earlier about what a comment that I was passed on when I was first kind of getting into it was, it was all about the money.
Yeah.
And that's that. In a nutshell, is what the one of the prime misconceptions is, that it's the financial side of things.
Yes.
It's how much money can you make out of this player? They don't give a rat's ass about this player's. They just want to line their pockets and blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
And as I said, from a personal point of view, I couldn't be any further from the truth, because I've actually got another job that pays my bills and stuff. I'm very content in life, got a wife, like nice family, all that sort of stuff. What I want to do is I want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And my personal experience was, from a playing point of view, although not at a high level, if I had had someone, not necessarily trying to tout me to the top teams, but looking after me and actually supporting me, and at the end of a phone call to say, I'm struggling a wee bit, or what do you think, blah, 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 I think that would have helped me massively.
Mm-hmm.
I want to then do that for others, and if anything, help them maximise their career and sort of reach the heights that they should and could, given a bit of luck and given the right move, all that sort of stuff, and right advice. But I think, purely, I think it all comes down to the financial side. There's that sort of misconception of that they don't care about the player. It's only about themselves and only about to try and pay, like to line their pockets. Whereas the majority, actually, from my point of view, again, is going to be further from the truth.
Yeah.
That, like any job, it does, and especially in the football industry, sometimes it can pay well. But at the end of the day, you're there to try and service your client and help your client, and if your client's good enough, yes, there is financial reward to that, like any job.
Yeah.
But it's that's not why you get into it, and that's not why I got into it. It was purely from I want to help people, a transferable skill from loads of other things that I've done in life. Let's try and help some footballers kind of maximise their career and realise their potential at the end of the day.
And when you tell people that you do agency work, is there always a bit of like assumption that's there is,
and it's I think it's the whole, when you first tell people, particularly maybe have a little bit of an idea about football, and you say, oh, I work with this, it's always the reaction of, oh, aye, that's no bad, aye, you must be doing all right, and it's like, well, aye, but also it's not really about me, and that, again, that's a personal point of view, that it's never been about me, it's always about the client, and the clients that we work for, said earlier, about 270 odd clients. they're our clients, so we work for them. And if they want something, we try and do it for them. And that's it at the end of the day. So yeah, you do get that sort of reaction at times from people, but part and parcel of it.
Yeah. And finally, just all kind of overarching one is, do you think it's quite a big question, do you think the transfer window works as it is with the two windows, or do you think it should just be like back to the old way of just having it at any point?
I think it does, because I think it regulates it.
Okay.
I think it regulates it and it keeps it under control in a certain sense. I think because it then also there's a little bit of the quality in it as
yep.
well, in terms of your smaller clubs that maybe aren't financially, I think, could quite easily be swallowed up by the bigger fish
yep.
in terms of during the season. If a player was doing really, really well, come October, they could just buy their best player.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it, even like, not that it maybe necessarily would happen, but if a club was in a relegation battle, they could quite easily at any point go and try and buy their best player to destabilise a team. You know,
that's
just a hypothetical.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think in many ways it regulates it, it keeps it relatively fair.
Yep.
And there will always be sort of financial disparity between clubs and leagues and countries. But yeah, it regulates it, it keeps it relatively fair. And I think it would be. It would be the Wild West, I think, without it.
Yeah, okay.
In a way.
Nice one. Well, Josh, thank you very much for taking your time to speak to us.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been great.
Sports Social Podcast Network.